You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Rommel. Welcome to Chris Bosh Week. Today is the first of our five episodes all dedicated to Chris Bosh, who's going to have his jersey retired on Tuesday during halftime of the Heat's game versus the Magic. We've got a ton of great stuff in store for you this week.
We're really excited about this. We'll have Tom Haberstraw on to reflect on the Big Three era. Anthony Chang of the Miami Herald will be with us after the jersey retirement for an inside look into the ceremony. And our friend Rowan Carney from Sports Illustrated will join us for a Big Bosh mailbag.
But today we're starting at the beginning in 2010 when Bosh and Dwayne Wade announced on ESPN a day before LeBron's decision that they would be signing with the Heat. We're going to play the interview for you, taking breaks throughout to comment and analyze on what they said, because there's a lot going on in here. There's a lot of foreshadowing. It's really interesting to see what they said back then and then just sort of how things played out. So let's get to it.
Well, once again, our breaking news today was the news that Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh made, and that is where they will play next year. A lot goes into this. A lot of math goes into this as we ponder this move and think about where LeBron will go. Tom Penn, our capologist at the ESPN salary cap machine, will break down the math for you. But again, finally, after a long wait, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh made their news official live on SportsCenter. They spoke with Michael Wilbon.
We're going to cut right to the chase. Dwayne and Chris, Dwayne, we'll start with you. Where are you going to be playing next season?
Well, I'm back in Miami, man. I'm back in, as for now, I'm back in Wade County.
As of now, I'm back in Wade County. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I guess it was an unofficial announcement because, if I recall correctly, they hadn't signed any deals yet, mm-hmm. and I'm not even sure. I guess the free agency period had begun, but there wasn't any kind of official signing or anything like that. If I recall, he's also in the video. It shows that he's at some kind of a summer camp or something along those lines, mm-hmm. either one that he does privately and maybe in his hometown or something along those lines. So I can't recall exactly where the location was that he's filming on, but I guess maybe he just misspoke there. I'm not quite sure. I mean, he was.
Do you think that means as of now it's called Wade County?
I don't know. Like, I think the official proclamation or something like that, calling it Dwayne Jones or whatever, something like that county, and then eventually becoming Wade County. I don't think that had been years before. Maybe how about this? Maybe we're not seeing all that we can, and maybe he has decided at least to go to Miami, but maybe he's holding out whether or not LeBron James signs elsewhere, mm-hmm. and maybe he could change his mind and join LeBron wherever LeBron joined.
Interesting.
Back in Miami with the Heat. Chris, you want to jump in and tell us where you're going to be as well?
Yeah, I'm joining Mr. Wade in Miami.
Are these final decisions, guys? You don't have to sign until tomorrow. Is there wiggle room? Could somebody else come and steal you between now and then?
Good question.
Chris, you fine. I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. I think we're both fine with the situation.
Okay, that was a little awkward. Yeah, they look at it like they're just kind of like looking around when Wilbon asks them that. And they're just like, yeah, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think Wilbon kind of drops the ball a little bit because, you know, he throws out this open-ended question to two different people that he's interviewing, knowing that they can both kind of interject at any point, so it makes for a little bit more awkward. He like at the first question, you know, he asked Dwayne specifically, then goes on to Chris. But either way, they both answered that they were confirming that they were coming to Miami. You know, so much of this time period was so hazy, you know, and it was so much fun kind of rewatching this video and going through the memories of it and trying to, at that point in time, back in 2010, I remember signing up for Twitter specifically for the Big Three announcement and being like on the edge of my seat, trying to, you know, find out the most information that I could, and hearing from Stephen A. Smith on local radio that he was projecting that all three players would come to Miami, and then hearing that an announcement would be made. And, you know, I don't think it was the same kind of 24-hour news cycle where we were getting information as quickly. I don't think we were getting updates on everything as quickly as we do nowadays. Like, there were no Woj bombs at that point in time. And so, you know, you kind of hear, and you're checking Twitter, and then, you know, somebody reports this, and then eventually kind of trickles through, and then, you know, it gets to us on the outside. And I wasn't in basketball or in media at that point in time. I was working in PR, and I remember sitting at my desk, setting up my Twitter account on the sly, hoping that nobody would come around and check my work computer, you know, updating every few minutes. The same way I do now, or whenever there's a Woj bomb ready to drop any second. But
right.
A little bit different has changed. I didn't have notifications set up on my phone, and, you know, it was a different world back then. And then, you know, just so much fun to see them kind of confirm that they're going. I mean, they both shared an agent, so I think that was a big part of why they both kind of agreed simultaneously on SportsCenter to announce where they were intending to go to Miami. And it was kind of interesting because it was set apart from LeBron's eventual decision. Obviously, the TV special didn't happen until the next day.
We've wanted to play with each other, and we have a golden opportunity to do that. So we're going to take advantage of it.
Well, there's been so much talk about you guys playing together, but also with a third person, with LeBron James. Dwayne, I want to start with you on this. Reports about you guys talking with LeBron already, saying, hey, come on down here and join us. Where do those discussions stand now, and do you think you're going to have them?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's no secret that myself and Chris and LeBron are all good friends. You know, we all came into this league together and, you know, play together. But, you know, we all make our own decisions at the end of the day. So, of course, we would, you know, love for LeBron, you know, to join Miami. You know, who wouldn't? But at the same time, LeBron is going to make his own decision. And that's a decision that we all will be in front of the TV tomorrow to wait for. But, you know, this opportunity that me and Chris have to, you know, to team up and play together, you know, just an unbelievable opportunity for me to be able to play with someone of his caliber. I got an opportunity to play with Shaq, and that was just, you know, phenomenal. And I get to play with, you know, Chris, you know, right when he hit his prime. Right now, I'm one of the luckiest men, you know, in the NBA and in the world.
So a lot to kind of take away from that. First of all, I don't know how much I believe Dwayne Wade when he says that it's LeBron's own decision. I mean, it is LeBron's own decision, but how much, sure, like, he's just sort of like playing it off. And look, I get it, right? He didn't want to like step on his friend's toes. Like, we already knew that the decision was happening, blah, blah, blah. But right. I don't buy that. Before we get into that, David, isn't it incredible how much different Dwayne Wade sounds in interviews right now? Like, first of all, he looks really young in this interview, and he does come off a little bit less polished. And it was that when I first time I kind of went back and watched this, I was like, man, the Big Three era, like, for Dwayne Wade really sort of put him on this like pedestal, and he got like really, really good at doing these interviews. And now, and you and I know this, like, you talk to him in a locker room setting or a media setting, and he's one of the best guys in the league right now at doing this. And in this one, like, he kind of just gave you these like bland answers. Wasn't really polished. Like I said, it was kind of jarring.
It is. That's an interesting point there. And you brought up to me when you first talked about this, how much of a contrast it was to the Dwayne Wade that we see today. You know, it's kind of interesting because, like, obviously, he'd already been in the league for 7 years. He'd won the championship in 06, and he'd been, you know, an MVP-type player for a number of seasons already, been an all-star. So it's not like he was unaccustomed to having media, but maybe this was just a different kind of, you know, again, the world was a different one. And even these kinds of, you know, players doing interviews live on SportsCenter, those kinds of things, I don't know that that was done all that frequently. We kind of take for granted that they're done now. But in 2010, I think there was just so much hype about this decision-making process from not just LeBron, but from Wade and Bosch and others, that it's just kind of, I guess it was a little jarring for him, and one he wasn't quite used to. Obviously, so much media scrutiny over the next four seasons during the Big Three era, it kind of hardened him and helped him understand how to respond, how to deflect, when to go a little bit longer in your responses. And even to today in 2019, obviously, a completely different version. Like, he is so good at navigating the waters of an interview, so skillfully, and he knows when to deflect, when to make it seem like he's humble, and when to kind of take credit for something, and at the same time kind of include his teammates. So a very, very different version. At this point, what was he, 28? I mean, he was pretty young at this point. So, I mean, he's a different version of the person that he is nowadays, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you can tell he sort of like rambles in his answer there, and it doesn't like necessarily, you know, answer the question totally. And so, yeah, I think he's gotten a lot better at that. Where Chris Bosh, on the other hand, is just awesome already. Like, that's the thing about Chris Bosh, and it is Chris Bosh week. So, and that's a kind of going to be a big theme throughout our shows all week is just like, not only was he an awesome basketball player and an underappreciated basketball player, but off the court, you know, in a media setting, one of the most interesting guys in the league. And he was great basically right away. And he'll start talking right here. So let's just go ahead and play that after this break.
Chris, you had the chance. Toronto was going to give you that chance to go to Cleveland, team with LeBron James, through a sign and trade, which would have given you more upfront guaranteed money. Why did you turn down that deal?
Well, I mean, I leave that for my agent, really. I really don't know the specifics in that conversation, but it was just about me and Dwayne talking at that time. I wasn't sure if LeBron was coming back, and I just wanted to leave that decision up to him. I wanted to choose the best situation for me and my family, and Miami was the best decision for me.
Rumored of the Cleveland Cavaliers sign trade, because it really what ended up kind of being the Cavaliers and the Heat. I think towards the end, there's a lot of teams involved. The Knicks were involved, but it really ended up being the Heat and the Cavs kind of going for Chris Bosh at the end there. And I'm almost like, if you're a Cavaliers fan and Bosh signs with the Heat, weren't you just sort of like shaking in your boots, like, oh my god, like, does Bosh signing in Miami mean LeBron is leaving? Because, like, it seems pretty obvious that that could have been the case, but again, like, that's, I'm saying that as, like, Wes Goldberg in 2019, like, jaded NBA media guy, like, who has seen all this player movement, but, like, back then, you're like, alright, Bosh going there, like, yeah, like, it probably, it could mean that LeBron's going to Miami, but LeBron would never leave Cleveland, right? Like, that's kind of how everybody thought back then, because of how momentous of a shift in sort of the player dynamic in the NBA LeBron's decision was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, you know, in a week from then, or maybe even 2 days from there, you're thinking about the fact that LeBron James is going on to Miami. But for one fleeting moment, there was the hope that you could get LeBron James and Chris Bosh on that roster, and mm-hmm. then you're kind of left with neither of them. And that must be even worse. I mean, obviously the decision played out the way it did, but I also wanted to say, I don't buy Chris's response there. Like, I don't know that he's necessarily being duplicitous, but I didn't. First of all, we looked into that sign and trade possibility. It seemed like it was a rumor more than anything else. I don't think there was anything outright reported. Again, in 2010, no Wojnarowski to kind of break the news and be in the Toronto Raptors or Cleveland Cavaliers front office saying, oh, no, they've had discussions for X number of players. You know, I don't know. He says that it was a conversation that he had with Dwayne Wade, and he wanted to join Dwayne in Miami separate from wherever LeBron would wind up signing. But I don't know if that was the case. Like, I wonder, given what he just said, do you think that if the reality is that the Cavaliers could have entertained a sign and trade with Toronto, would he have preferred to join LeBron in Cleveland rather than joining Dwayne in Miami?
Well, here's the thing, because that summer, I mean, you could have argued that, like, we're only a couple of years away, or a year away, 2 years away from Dwayne Wade having winning the scoring title and possibly being in that conversation as best player in the league. He was in that conversation. So if you're Chris Bosh, you're kind of looking at it, you're like, all right, if I have to pick one of LeBron and Wade, well, they're kind of similar as far as, you know, how I could play off of them. So I might as well go to Miami so I don't have to live in Cleveland, especially because he's a dude coming from Toronto. He's probably like, you know, if I'm going to make the move, I'm going to make the move, right? I'm going to go to sunny South Florida. So I think that was part of it. I still don't buy this idea that they didn't know. I think they knew. I really do think they knew that maybe they didn't know 100%, but because, again, LeBron has talked about how hard of a decision that was, and, you know, he probably waffled a bunch of times and were like, well, LeBron can wake up tomorrow morning and end up just saying, I'm going to go back to Cleveland. But I think that they were maybe 90% sure that LeBron was going to end up in Miami, and we're going to talk to Tom Haberstroh later in the week, and he sat down with Chris Bosh, and in his interview, and we're going to talk about this more with Tom, but even in that interview, Bosh was like, yeah, I didn't know 100%. And I'm kind of just like, why are you guys hiding this? You guys knew. Like, how could you have not have known?
Because it sounds like collusion. And we've heard this before. Like, you know, again, we were kind of forgetting.
It's like a 10-year cover-up.
You know, I mean, I think they don't want to take any shine off of that, the way it all came together. I mean, look, when you look at the previous big threes of that type era, you know, obviously there was the Boston Celtics, that was probably collusion with Kevin McHale and former teammate Danny Ainge between, you know, Minnesota and Boston. You look at the Spurs and their big three, they drafted those players, and that's how that was formed. But at the same time, Miami, again, to enter in free agency, to go together to Miami like that, especially after having kind of milked the process of going to Chicago and going to New York, going to Cleveland, and kind of entertaining all these meetings with different front offices, and then to say, you know what, well, we weren't really going to do any of this. We were just going to go and sign in Miami all along, I think would have been, look, I mean, they took so much heat for the celebratory, you know, event after this, the announcement, right? I mean, there was just so much that this team, remember where we were in 2010, you know, this Miami Heat organization was hated across the country. I mean, they were so despised. Everything they did was an indictment of the kind of people they were, et cetera. I mean, even Chris, if it had just been Chris signing with Dwayne in Miami, who knows, it might've been different. But the fact that they were able to get LeBron there as well, it was, you know, it was just so much more to handle.
Do you think Bosch and LeBron had Bosch accepted that sign and trade to Cleveland, do you think that, and then obviously LeBron re-signs with the Cavaliers hypothetically, does that team win a title?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you think of the challenge that Boston represented at the time and the eventual challenge that the Pacers would represent, even though we kind of tend to overlook that Indiana team because they didn't really have a clear superstar, although Danny Granger was solid and
Paul George.
You know, eventually Paul George would eventually become a great player. I don't think we ever saw that team, you know, as dangerous as they were. But I think Miami,
that Chicago team to too, that the Derrick Rose Chicago Bulls.
Oh yeah, good point. Yeah, I mean they led the league as far as their record or their overall regular season record is concerned. So I mean that's a good point. I don't think that LeBron, as good as he was, and the combination of Chris, certainly as good as he was, would have been enough to upset either of those teams. So it kind of needed a big three to knock off a big three in Boston.
And you know, Eric Spoelstra is not coaching in Cleveland, right? Like, who decides to move Chris Bosh to center?
Right. I mean, that's a good point.
Dwayne, last week you were in Chicago, where you are something of a hero, even though you've played your professional career in Miami. What was it like to tell your hometown team, the team you rooted for growing up, and you have family and friends and two young sons in Chicago? What was it like? How difficult was it to say no?
It's very difficult, and you know, a lot of speculation out there, but you know, it's one of the hardest decisions that I've had to make as a professional player. You know, Chicago, you know, they have my heart. You know, they own my emotions. I get tear up a little bit right now just thinking about you know, the opportunity that I had. Eventually, you know, of course, it came down to Chris and his decision to want to be here in Miami with me, and I couldn't pass up on that decision. But you know, to all my fans in Chicago, you know, that's my home. You know, that's where my heart will always be. And at the end of the day, I discussed this with my family. And at the end of the day, they're all happy that I'm back here in Miami. And it's going to all work out. So unfortunately, it didn't work out that I'm in Chicago. But Chicago is my heart, and it will always be.
Was there a time when you were up there in the middle of all the hysteria in Chicago where you thought you'd be going home?
It was a time there where things kind of swinged and it played on my emotions a lot, you know, because I am a family oriented person, and you know, everyone heard this stuff about my kids, and that was gonna be my final decision, where, you know, of course I want to be just like, you know, just like every man in the world. You want to be the best dad possible, you want to, you know, have every moment with your kids, and that is true. But I couldn't make this an emotional decision. You know, I had to take myself out of it. That's why I left Chicago and I didn't come to Miami. I went somewhere else and thought about this for a while. I had to take my emotions out of this and make the best decision. And it became the best decision for me, especially when Chris said he wanted to come down.
Now, let's stop it there because Wade's about to start talking about Chris Bosh there. But he said a lot about Chicago and how close he was to signing with the Bulls that summer. And David, I remember thinking like that year, like,
yeah,
Dwayne Wade's going to Chicago. There was a lot of scuttle there, and I remember there was a moment too where I thought all three of these guys were going to end up on the New York Knicks. But look, Wade was really close to going back to the Bulls. He mentioned how tough it was as an emotional decision, right, to kind of reject the Bulls. And if not for LeBron and Bosch even hinting that they wanted to come to Miami, I think Dwayne Wade goes to the Bulls that summer.
That's an interesting question there. I don't, I mean, to play. He could have played with Derrick Rose. He would have been in his second season there. They wouldn't have had to give up anything. I mean, they still had that young core of Luol Deng and
Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had a good squad, not to mention Rose. So it's an interesting supposition. I mean, obviously, in retrospect, having known that he did wind up playing a season in Chicago, you could tell in listening to this that that's always been a goal for him. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think, you know, and in the business of the NBA, you know, when you play for a team and when you have fans that support you for that team, you can't really go around and say, oh, you know, I'm playing for Miami and I love Miami and its fans, but hell, I'd rather be a Laker. Or I dreamed of being a Laker and I still dream of being a Laker. That's something you can't say publicly. You know, he's saying that Chicago, the city, has his heart and that he has an emotional connection to them. And I think that's a big reason why eventually, not to mention $20-something million, that he eventually played that one season in Chicago. But it's clear that it was a goal for him even in 2010. And as far as whether or not he would have joined that team, you know, that's hard to say because he did have family in Miami at the time. He was a little more established there, but probably wouldn't have been very difficult for him to uproot and to go to 2010 and in 2010 go to Chicago and be a part of that team. Was Tom Thibodeau coaching already in 2010?
Because that's interesting. I mean, he left the Celtics after they won that title, right?
Now, would that team have been good enough? Yeah, would that team have been good enough?
Yeah, because Derrick Rose took the leap that year, right? And I think Derrick Rose was still
MVP.
Yeah, he still would have taken that leap. He was ready to take that, with or without Dwayne Wade being there. I think that team wins the title that year. I do. I mean, those Bulls teams were really hard, even for the Heat with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. So that kind of stuck out to me how he did seem emotional talking about Chicago. And I do think it was really, really close. And it was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. And he says this, and we're going to get into that right now, but too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Miami, because this is what we asked for. We asked for flexibility. And now we have that in Miami. We have flexibility to put players around us that's going to, you know, make us look even better. And now we can get, you know, on the page to building the championship from this point on.
Talking about flexibility, this was the Pat Riley gambit, right? This was everything that Pat Riley hoped to do. Let's create all of this cap flexibility. And either we're going to lose everybody and have to rebuild from the very beginning, right? You just start from the bottom, or we end up with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, again, you kind of hinted at that Haberstroh interview, and one of the things that Chris tells Tom at that point was about that salary cap flexibility and the fact that Miami had created all that cap space. So, like, we think about what the New York Knicks are doing now in 2019 and what other teams have managed to do, or even how they were able to juggle an oft-injured Steph Curry in order to accommodate guys like Kevin Durant. I mean, that's the only reason why it was able to work out that way in the first place. But in 2010, I don't think anybody else had, and this is why Riley should continue to get as much credit as he does, because they had the vision of saying, you know what, we're going to take this gamble. We're going to move as many players. We're going to sign all these short-term contracts, and it's going to pay off. And maybe other teams were doing it, but I don't think they did it as completely and as efficiently. And the fact that they were able to already look from the perspective of the Knicks, maybe they had cap space to sign all three players. Maybe they did, but they were lacking a player already on the roster to bring in other guys and say, this is going to make it work. And this is where Miami had the difference maker in Dwayne Wade.
Wade was like, hey, I've been here. Right. We can win here.
Right. You're taking a chance on, well, hell, I don't even remember who was coaching the Knicks in 2010.
I have no idea.
Yeah, but I mean, at least Wade can sell you on Spoelstra. I mean, you're going to go to Cleveland. Is LeBron telling everybody, oh, come here and play for
Mike Brown,
yeah. I mean, you know, Dwayne is telling people Spoelstra's really good. He's a good coach. You've got Pat Riley. Mm-hmm. And look, now in retrospect, again, we've heard LeBron had, you know, he had entertained the idea of Pat Riley eventually coaching this team. And you know, there's a stability there. There's a championship success, a recent championship success, too, that makes it a big selling point.
And that happened with Dwayne Wade, right? That might have been part of Dwayne Wade's pitch. Like, hey, look, if things don't work out, Riley will come back down from the front office, because he did that with me and Shaq.
We'll come back to that in a second. But, Chris, let me ask you this. Dwayne had a difficult decision, and it was obvious. It was tough. You seem to have so much fun with this. You were tweeting. You were talking to various teams. Was it fun for you? Did you like being recruited?
Well, I mean, when you're placed in a situation like that, you're going to have to enjoy it no matter what, because it's going to happen. So that's something I believe in. I've always done that throughout my whole life. So I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to have fun being put in whatever situation I'm going to be in. And yeah, I've been enjoying it. I mean, it's been an exciting time. It's been one of the biggest stories in sports. So just to be a part of that, I felt that I had to enjoy it instead of maybe just trying to run away from everything. Instead of doing that, I embraced it. And it's gone quite well for me.
Okay, so that's the end of the video here. That's basically the end of the interview, David. But that was really, really interesting what Bosch is saying, because he, in between all of the cliches of being really excited and blah, 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 he says something which is also kind of jarring in the moment, where I'm not going to run away from the free agency. I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to enjoy it. And he talked about, you know, sort of just being this independent person in this entire mix. And look, I know that LeBron gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so, for player empowerment. But he did sort of shy away from it. And as much as the decision was so out there, he was modest in the entire thing. He went back and he's talked about it. And it just seemed like Bosch from the very beginning was like, you know what? No, I'm a free agent. I'm allowed to do whatever I want. I know that Toronto loves me, but I'm ready to go somewhere else. And he really did just embrace it. And look, LeBron got a lot of hate for leaving Cleveland. Chris Bosch got a lot of hate for leaving Toronto. Toronto fans were not happy with him. And he was part of the big three, the parade and everything, just like LeBron and Wade were. And so I just think it kind of underscores how different Chris Bosh is, you know, of all these NBA players. He really did seem to kind of be on the forefront of this whole player movement thing.
That's a good point. That's a really good point, because I think you're absolutely right. Like he recognized the writing on the wall even beforehand. And you know what? And he ultimately said, you know what? It doesn't matter. I have to do what's right for me. I have to make the decision that's best for me in conjunction with his family. But outside of, you know, trying to make fans happy and things of that sort, you know, you wonder whether or not the situation in Toronto was just so completely untenable. Right? He just had to move out of there. And, you know, he talks a little bit more about this, and he's discussed it, you know, in other appearances as well. But, you know, obviously the pressure was on him to succeed at a higher level. And Toronto, of those three teams, of Miami, Cleveland, and Toronto was the worst record-wise. Mm-hmm. They just were struggling to make the playoffs, and this, you know, was a challenge for him to become a well-known player. Like, we think about it right now, we think about Toronto as good as they are, and contending for the Eastern Conference Championship and things of that sort. But back then, I don't think that people recognized them the same way. Like, in 2010, people didn't see that Toronto team, you know, as being anything other than the team that Vince Carter had once played for. And they didn't have the same kind of attention. Look, Canadians and Toronto fans will still say they don't get that kind of attention from the U.S. market. So it probably stuck out to Chris a lot more sharply than it did for either LeBron, because LeBron had already made a finals run. Dwayne had already made a finals run, winning a title. Chris hadn't even tasted. He had barely tasted the playoffs. They were trying to struggle, you know, just to even get in the postseason. So for him, he probably recognized, look, it's more important for me to get out of here so that I could be recognized as one of the greats of the game. And so he was willing to take on that challenge, embrace it, as he says. And so it's interesting to see how open and aware he was of that, because I think a lot of players, even as they undergo free agency nowadays, aren't as self-aware about what the impacts will be. They kind of, you know, I don't think Kevin Durant anticipated how badly Oklahoma City fans would respond to his departure. You know, he made the move anyway. But I don't know that guys like Kevin Durant make that move without Chris and maybe to a lesser extent LeBron making the moves in 2010.
I don't think LeBron makes the move. I don't know if he does. You know, like, Bosch is sort of the, like, we talk about Wade and Bosch signing in Miami is sort of setting the table for LeBron to go to Miami. But it was an easier thing for Dwayne Wade to just re-sign, right? For Chris Bosch to leave his situation, it LeBron wasn't going to be alone if he had to also make that decision. And so now he's able, and Bosch makes that decision first, and he really does sort of open the door, really, for LeBron to go to Miami. And So the effects of Bosch's decision are huge, right? Because it wasn't just Bosch joining Dwayne Wade. It was Bosch and LeBron James joining Dwayne Wade. And of course, we know how the Big Three era worked out.
You know, we had talked about what would have happened if Dwayne had signed in Chicago and what the impact would have been. You know, you make a good point. Like, even as we're kind of routinely, ignoring Chris Bosh's impact in the Big Three, he's not Dwayne, who was already established in Miami. He's not LeBron, who was, generally agreed upon as the best player in the world. It doesn't happen without Chris. What if we look at Dwayne being the trendsetter and saying, look, I'm in Miami, come join me in Miami. But what if Chris had said, you know what, guys, I mean, I don't really care about playing in Miami. I don't really care about the title chase or anything like that. I'd rather go someplace that means more to me. Maybe he could have gone closer to his hometown. Maybe he could have gone to the Lakers. Maybe he would have been the guy who kind of takes that step. What happens then? You just mentioned that LeBron wouldn't have been willing to go on his own, but maybe he would have had no choice. If Chris had signed elsewhere, maybe a third or fourth team that nobody saw on the horizon, what happens then as far as LeBron? Does he stay in Cleveland? Does Dwayne Wade then say, if Chris isn't coming to Miami, there's no reason for me to come back. I'm going to go join the Bulls. And then LeBron says, then I'll take my talents to New York. Could you imagine if, let's say Chris Bosh joins the Lakers that summer, and then LeBron joins Amar'e Stoudemire, yep, and Carmelo in New York, and then
did Stoudemire Wade goes to Chicago. Did Stoudemire sign before Bosh and Wade?
He did. Yeah. He did.
Okay.
Yeah. He there was hope there. I think that they could have signed together, but I don't think it was. They had space for two max spots, I think, if I recall correctly. So, and Amar'e was the guy who took it first.
So does. And then I remember there was rumors. I remember a lot of Heat fans for a year were Stoudemire and Wade. That was going to be the thing.
Yes.
And then it ended up being Bosh and Wade.
Absolutely.
And I was rooting for Stoudemire and Wade. I hadn't even thought about Chris Bosh because I was an American and didn't think at all about Canada.
Well, I mean, think about how much pressure Chris was under in 2010. We think about it now. He was quote-unquote soft. He wouldn't go into the post. He was a guy who was, taking mid-range jump shots compared to the electric athleticism of Amar'e Stoudemire that we had seen in the playoffs alongside Steve Nash. I mean, he was a guy who was a rim roller who could dunk with authority. He was pulling down 15 rebounds per game, all this stuff. And Chris was not that type of player. And I don't know that we even took into consideration probably one of the things that made him most endearing and continues to make him most endearing to Heat fans is his incredible personality and off the court persona and the person that he is, the way he embraced South Florida culture, learning Spanish, drinking cafecito cubano. And, he did all these wonderful things to become such a part of not just the Heat, but South Florida. And I think we kind of overlooked that in 2010. Like you said, I think a lot of Heat fans were probably looking at Stoudemire's athleticism and didn't recognize the kind of impact Chris Bosh could have. And then in 2010, we realized, holy cow, this guy can shoot. He can drive to the rim whenever he wants to. And, of course, wound up playing excellent defense and becoming a trendsetter. As much as we talk about Draymond Green and Golden State, Chris Bosh did it first. He was a guy who stretched the floor. He was a guy who played defense at the five position along the perimeter. He made the Big Three teams work. As great as the talents individually are of LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, that team doesn't work without Chris Bosh.
And that's a great segue into tomorrow's show with Tom Haberstroh, because he was there covering the team for ESPN during that Big Three era. Again, he talked about Bosh with his in his podcast, The Haber Show. I don't know how I feel about that podcast name, but it's there if you guys – I recommend that – listeners, you go ahead and listen to that, because we're going to talk about that podcast, that sit-down interview that he had with Chris Bosh on our show tomorrow. And we're going to talk about that interview and talk about basically everything that Bosh meant from an X's and O's standpoint and all sorts of things. That's, again, tomorrow as we continue along with Chris Bosh Week here on Locked On Heat. Locked On Bosh. You can connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, including Spotify. Rate, review, and say nice things about us. Check out the Patreon page for exclusive content that helps support the show. Make sure to get your Chris Bosh-themed mailbag questions in for our Mailbag with Rohan on Friday. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Yeah!